permit, we came.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left.
Who are you?
Explorers in the further regions of experience. Demons to some, angels to others.
Call you Meatloaf Jack?
Hello and welcome to How I Met Your Monster, the show where we discuss the introductions to your favorite movie monsters. I'm Zach.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Casey.
And today is all about angels and hearts.
Yep.
Hearts and angels.
Yep.
Angel heart.
Angel heart. Angels have heart in like a non-literal sense because they're not like... They're like ethereal beings, so they wouldn't physically have a heart.
Do you know what angels look like according to the Bible?
No.
What?
All right.
What do they look like?
Hold on. I know that they're fucked up.
Oh, wait. You don't know?
You're just like reading the Bible. And then this fucked up creature walks
No,
in.
They have...
It's an angel.
Four faces, like, oh, that of a lion, an ox, an eagle, and a human. They have straight legs, four wings, and bull hooves for feet that gleam like polished brass.
And they lead you into heaven.
I don't want to go. I don't want to go.
No, thank you.
I don't want to go. I want to go party with Satan.
What Bible is this in? Isn't there like multiple Bibles?
This is the Bible, Zach.
That's in one of them.
I don't know. I'm just thought there's
how many Bibles like have you read?
Versions. Just a couple that are in the church pews when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Zach would sit down and read the entire Bible every Sunday just in one sitting.
That's what my parents told me church was. I never knew until I was older that they were just punishing me.
They're like, the four-headed beast will summon your soul to heaven if you don't come.
We only went to church on Christmas.
Yeah. Oh. We used to go. I used to be an altar boy.
I mean, I went to church on my own. I liked church.
Oh. Did you?
When did you step away from it?
I used to go to youth group and stuff, and I really liked youth group. And then I went on a missions trip to Mexico when I was 15, 16. And I had piercings, facial piercings at that point. And it was like a group of like 20 of us that went from my church. And then there were like 900 people from like all over the country. And one of the ministers who was there told me that I had to take my piercings out or they would send me on the next flight home. And I was like, well, that seems very strange that I'm here to like teach people about God. And we were building houses in Tijuana. And he told me to take my piercings out. And I was like, I don't want to fucking be part of church if this is what church is like. Because my church was really cool. Like, I'm still friends with my pastor and his wife. So it was just really weird. I didn't know that that's what religion was like until I went there, and then that happened, and I was like, well, I guess organized religion is not for me, and then I just got further and further away from it, basically.
So as someone who has, like, a history with religion, when you watch certain horror movies that incorporate religion or, like, the devil or God or anything, do you find that those are especially scarier? Or does it like, because are you looking at it like, oh, I believe this, or I like, this could be real. Like, does that make it scarier?
No, it makes me, no offense for anybody who listens that's religious, but I don't know. It just freaks me out that people do believe in it.
Gotcha. So you have so far, if you don't mind me asking again, you have like completely 100% like dismissed it
religion
from your life. Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
I identify as an atheist, but you know, it's like,
gotcha.
I have a lot of like when we were talking about the Satanist, the satanic temple and stuff like that, I have a lot of ideals that align with them, but I'm not like a member or anything.
Gotcha.
But no, I'm so far away from that, man, it like freaks me out that people are able to believe in that.
Yeah. You were in the party. You got a good look around. You walked out of the party and now you got what some of us folks call perspective.
A little
and
bit.
And there ain't nothing scarier than perspective.
A little bit of perspective. Right. I don't want to shit on it. I mean, religion.
No, no, of course.
It has done very terrible things, but it's also done very good things for people. You know what I mean? So it just depends.
I had kind of a similar-ish journey because I was just raised, you know, Roman Catholic, and I went to a Catholic school up until eighth grade. I was an altar boy. But it was all very, it was like casual Catholicism. You know, there was never, I always heard the term like worship, and that wasn't really associated with kind of like how we, I don't know, like we were just, it was sort of like, you just did it, you know, like, you know, you respected God in the same way you respected your elders. It was just like, you know, you wear a gold chain, you eat pasta on Sundays, you go to church.
Yum. And
like you get yelled at by like an older Italian person, and that was it. But I've since just kind of like walked away from it, but I do have this like lingering fear every now and then of like the what if. And I think it's that, you know, it's a combination of like Catholic guilt and just the fact that you're sort of, and I think this would be the case with anything, if you know, it's just you're so young, you're so vulnerable, and adults are convincing you of something. Not only are they convincing you of something so like passionately, but they're also, they plant this seed of doubt where it's well, you're supposed, it's faith. Yeah. That's the point. You can't see it. So it's like, oh God, you know, like that just like hovers over you. It's terrifying. I mean, every now and then I'll be like, you know, ever like wake up in the middle of the night and like, especially after watching horror movies and like at 3:15, that's when like, the demons come out. The witching hour. So I'll wake up and I'm like, please don't be 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. Please don't be 3 a.m. And I look and I'm like, okay, there's a 50-50 chance the devil is in my living room right now. And he's coming for me. And I really hope that's not the case. And then I'll wake up in the morning with like that like morning clarity of like, the hell was I so scared of?
Jeez. So stupid. 3 a.m. Danny. He's weird.
he's just very scared of everything. Okay, Zach. I feel so bad. You are so on the outside of this conversation.
Yeah, tell us about your religious experience.
No, I went to Catholic grade school.
Yeah.
Did you?
I'm not Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school until eighth grade. Yeah.
Oh.
And it was funny. Our school was like below the church in like the quote unquote hell, if you will.
Oh, that's terrifying.
I'm just kidding.
The hell of the church.
I'm just kidding.
That's what they called it. They're like, welcome to hell.
But like our pep rallies for like sports were in the church. And so you're Catholic, Danny, or you were, I don't know if you are.
I have like that lingering fear. That's like, just in case I'm like 10% Catholic.
He's scared Catholic. That's what we call scared.
In case God asks, I'm like,
at the very end, God, please.
Yeah. and you were an altar boy, so you'll know what I'm talking about. When we went up into the church, there was like this red candle. And that was supposed to represent like God being in the church or like Jesus or something. And when we went up there for our pep rallies, there had to be like this little ceremony thing. And then the priest would blow out the candle. And then it was like, okay for us to scream and yell in the church. And then when we left, they like lit it again. And we're like,
man,
like, once they blew it out, it was just like a room. It wasn't like
I love the power that God's. This candle has, where it's like, it has to be lit for God. God's like, no, don't blow it out. It's like, dude, gotcha.
That's fucking wild. Seriously.
I also have this image of like God picking out like the color that he wants for his church candle. He's like, between red and green, I know they're both Christmas colors, so it's kind of obvious, but.
Oh, man. That's wild, dude.
Yeah. This movie has opened up some doors in our religious past.
Yeah. And we absolutely
can't contain them.
Yeah.
But before we get too far into the movie, as always, I want to hear if you guys have watched anything horror related in the last week.
So I started Candy. Do you guys know what Candy is?
Is that the Jessica Biel?
Yes.
Show?
Yeah.
I have not watched it, but I've heard of it.
So it's a Hulu show. It's a 5-part series, a true story about a woman named Candy Montgomery that murdered a woman with an axe.
Yeah.
And she hit her 41 times.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It has, what's the woman from Detroit Rock City? Beth. She plays Beth in Detroit Rock City.
Her name is As soon as you say it, I'm going to fucking freak out.
Just for the listeners, because I know you can't see. He's foaming at the mouth.
Oh, Melanie Lynskey.
Melanie Lynskey.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome.
So she plays the woman that Candy axes. So that's pretty good. So it's five parts. What they did with it was kind of cool. So it happened Friday the 13th in like 1980. It was June 13th, 1980, but it was...
Wait, 1980?
What?
Isn't that when the movie set? Friday the 13th? Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So that's what they did, was that they released the first episode on Monday, and then every night they have an episode. So today, which is Friday, we're recording Friday the 13th. Today is the conclusion of the show.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Whoa, that's neat.
So I watched that, and then I also watched the new Doctor Strange movie.
How was it?
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay.
People are saying it's like very horror because Sam Raimi did it.
It is. Yes.
What are your thoughts? I'd love to hear.
No, it is. And that those are my favorite parts of it, were the horror aspects of it. And so I forgot that he directed it. So I'm watching it and I'm like, man, this is like feels very familiar. Like even just some of the transitions and like camera angles and stuff. Like it felt very familiar. And then at the end it said Sam Raimi. I'm like, oh yeah, no shit. I fucking knew that. Fun. Like, but yeah, there were some parts of it were really cool. Some of it was not. I don't really like Elizabeth Olsen. So she was a big
I was going to say that's movie. Why I'm excited to see it, because I loved WandaVision so much.
Yeah, I don't like
Did you
her.
Watch WandaVision?
No, because I don't like her. So I didn't want to watch just a series that was revolved around her. But
okay. I watched quite a few movies.
Oh, good.
I watched all three Blair Witch movies.
Mm? There are three?
A lot of fun. Three.
I used to love the second one. How does it hold up? Not good. Okay.
That is one of the craziest movies ever. When we always do, Jimmy and I do our rankings whenever we watch a franchise. And I was like positive that I was going to put part two in the last place. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, if all of you were like, let's watch like a crazy horror movie and like, let's just have fun, you know, like whatever, I'd be like, Blair Witch 2, hands down, like put it on. It is batshit crazy.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But yeah, so we watched the Blair Witch movies. I saw The Northman in theaters, which was really fun.
Oh, I want to see that.
I know that's not really horror, but I figured from like Robert Eggers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of like horrific elements in it, I guess. And then I watched The Sixth Sense. I was just having a hankering for it.
Yep.
And then I watched the two. Well, it's funny. I watched the first half of both of the first two episodes of the Joe Bob episodes of this new season. So I watched Black Sunday and Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
Black Sunday was a first time watch and that was so much fun. That's what I love about Joe Bob. You especially like when it's a first time watch and an older movie, and then you have him just kind of like dropping in context bombs like every 15 minutes or so. So if you haven't watched the new Joe Bob season, it's on Shudder and y'all should watch it. There's a new episode the night of tonight that we're recording Friday.
The night of tonight, but you'll will have tonight. Missed it.
The night of tonight.
If you go back in time with Doctor Strange, you'll catch it.
What'd you watch, Zach?
Well, I watched Fresh on Hulu.
Oh, yeah.
And let me tell you, it is fresh. Very good. Very good. Casey, you'll know what I'm talking about here because you've seen the movie. Dan, just put on your listening ears. The woman's performance, the main actress, her performance is incredible.
Yeah.
When the thing happens that happens.
Yeah.
Her reaction is just like mind-boggling, mind-bogglingly real.
Yeah.
Like she's like, she's in it and you're like, holy shit, this is exactly how you would act.
Yeah.
Anyways, so good. And Sebastian Stan is very good.
I love
him. He's very good in it. I also watched 47 Ronin. Have you guys seen 47 Ronin?
Yeah, all right.
Never.
It's a little bit of Kung Fu Keanu in here, Reeves. Huh? Okay.
It's the 46th sequel to the movie Ronin.
Yes, yes.
No, it's got Keanu Reeves, and he was like a, he was like taken to this village when he was a kid, and they thought he was like a demon because he was like half white, and he grew up in there, but he was in that village, but he was kind of like an outcast still, but like the ruler of the village, whatever, like the king, he like accepted him, but he kind of still kept him like on the outside. But then they're like, so it's like these samurai, and then there's like these monsters. There's like big mythical monsters, and they fight them sometimes.
Every once in a while, they get in a little, spat.
Get a little spat. So a Ronin is apparently a, it's like a samurai who doesn't have like a king to protect. They've lost their king for whatever reason. Because that's, I guess, like that's what the samurai is supposed to do, is like protect the kingdom, whatever. But if they like fail or something and their king gets killed, then they're considered a Ronin and they're like an outcast. And it is okay. I felt like it could have been.
Oh, I want to watch it now.
And I don't know the whole backstory, but I know Keanu Reeves was like involved like a lot in the, of bringing it to life, like behind the scenes, not just an actor. And this is the one time you'll catch me saying this, Casey, the one time. Keanu Reeves' performance in 47 Ronin isn't probably the best.
That's okay. Nice guy, Keanu.
That's
Reeves.
The one
nice
time guy. You'll hear me say that. Yeah. Yes. But I mean, it was, the story was really cool and I liked the idea of it. I didn't love it, but it was okay. Yeah. But I wanted there to be like more monsters.
Yeah, because I feel like,
I mean, there's 47 Ronin. You need at least, well, 47
monsters. You need a few more monsters.
Movies that like aren't typically put into like the fantasy, it's like they're too scared to go all the way with like a science fiction
to go all
fantasy
in.
Aspect of it. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that, and I'm not trying to do this as like a segue, but that's literally what I got from Angel Heart, where it's like,
no,
you didn't realize it's sort of like a supernatural movie. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. Oh, we're going there. Okay.
Is this the first time you've seen this, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Was it yours too, Casey?
Yeah. So let's just get right. Let's get right into the nitty gritty.
Okay.
That's not really into the
nitty-gritty.
So I guess what you're saying is it's time to meet our monster.
Yeah, let's
fucking
do it.
Angel Heart, off the novel Falling Angel by William Hjortsberg.
Okay. Hjortsberg. Known as Hjorts in school. Hjorts, come here, Hjorts. Come here.
His Hjorts name was William.
Oh, Billy. Billy
Hjortsberg. That didn't catch on.
So it's based on the novel by William Hjortsberg called Fallen Angel. Apparently, Alan Parker changed quite a few things in it. Mostly the ending and the setting, I think. But Alan Parker, who's known for Midnight Express, and I think his last movie that he made was The Life of David Gale. Did you guys ever see that?
Oh, my God.
With Kevin Spacey?
That movie's fucked.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just love this movie.
Yeah, you've been selling this to us for a while. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it took us this long to watch it. And Zach, it's a fun little movie.
Is it?
Fun little movie?
I was on. Yeah. Oh, it's so entertaining.
I don't feel like you're being serious, Danny.
It's morally sound. That's what I love about it.
Oh, morally sound. People don't have sex with 17-year-olds that are their daughters.
Yeah. Oh my. Yeah. There's so many just like bullet points in here. I'm just like, oh, that's not okay. That's also not okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, Lisa Bonet, when she was,
how do you have a segue from that?
Just when she was taking this role, she was known for her character on The Cosby Show.
Yeah.
Right. Alan Parker, I guess, didn't know that she was on The Cosby Show. He just liked her acting.
Okay.
But she went to her, I'm assuming, mentor at the time, yeah. Bill Cosby. She asked him if she should take this role, and he encouraged her to take this role. And I wonder why he did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to like this movie a lot. I didn't necessarily dislike it, but it was all way too obvious for me.
Oh, really? Everything went over my head.
Nah.
You know, I did have a feeling like Robert De Niro must be some kind of like, he seems like, okay, I can see he's probably.
His name was Louis Cipher. It again, is literally Lucifer.
Literally over my head.
I didn't even realize what his name was. They showed his fucking fingernails on a cane, and I was like, that man's the devil.
That's the thing. And I was like, angels, and I was like, okay.
Yes.
But then I was like, maybe that's too on the nose, and they're like just using that as sort of kind of like a front for a more grounded, you know, like no. reality, like a real story. But the end was when it did like kind of reveal everything. I was like, okay, that sort of paid off some of what I felt were sort of just like shortcomings, I guess, where yeah. I felt a little lost in the movie or taken out of it, where I didn't love it as much as I wanted to. The ending sort of got me back on track.
I loved the idea of this movie a lot. Mm-hmm. Very cool, like badass, fucking crazy, you know, Satan, you know, deals with the devil and shit like that. So I thought it was really cool. But like I said, it was just way too obvious. And even after like he's like, oh, I'm looking for Johnny Favorite. And people are like, oh, he changed his face. So like super early on, I'm like, well, then it literally could be anybody.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the first time I saw it, I was more in Danny's spot where I was like, I didn't catch on to anything until the end came. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Then when I was watching it this time, I was almost scared for you guys. I was like, they were saying these things. And it was kind of like you said, Casey, when they're like, his face was disfigured and they mm-hmm. wrapped it up and no one knows what he looks like anymore. I was like, mm-hmm. fuck, they're going to get it. They're going to know.
Danny didn't.
Well, do you know what threw me off? What kept me so distracted, and I'm being serious, was like, how creepy so many of the characters in this movie are, especially Harry Angel, which is the funniest name ever. So I'm just imagining like a Harry Angel.
Well, and that was another thing, was that his name was even Angel. Because in my mind, the whole time I'm thinking, well, if Mickey Rourke, who plays Harry Angel, actually is Johnny Favorite, how the fuck wouldn't the devil know that this is the guy that he's looking for? He's fucking Satan, right? Like, he would know.
But was he just like fucking with him? He was like putting him on like this trial kind of like.
Well, that's the thing, is that he knew. And so he was kind of like getting revenge or like payback or like kind of torturing him for trying to get away from him. Yeah. Right. He was like basically like, OK, fuck you, guy. I'm going to mess with everybody that you as Johnny Favorite like loved and had a relationship with.
Oh, OK.
You're just going to I'm going to make you kill them all.
Okay.
And then at the end, I'm going to tell you that it was you and you're coming with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nina had never seen Mickey Rourke before his facial reconstruction.
Oh,
wow.
So,
my God. Man. Speaking of facial reconstruction, oh, my God. Just like Johnny Favorite.
Just like Johnny Favorite. She gets through the whole movie and the end came and she was like, oh, that was Mickey Rourke? And I was like, wait a second. Oh, yeah. You just watched this whole movie not knowing that was Mickey Rourke?
She's like, I thought that was a grizzly Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Like, I understand.
I love young Mickey. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a pain in the ass, you know, but like in a fun way.
Well, have you guys ever seen 9 1/2 Weeks?
No, I've actually never seen that.
Okay.
Well, I know it's like very sexual, and I think it may have had an X rating at one point. Much like Angel Heart was given an X rating. God.
That sex scene is just layers upon layers of disturbing.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, 9 1/2 Weeks is all about him and Kim Basinger, and they just have a fucking fuck fest for 9 1/2 Weeks.
Like, is it actual, like, softcore porn? Or Because in this movie, it looked like real sex.
Oh, there was so much thrusting. The thrusting was so like ass.
It was like close-up thrusting. I was like, wow, that's.
Yeah, and the whole time I knew who he was, so I'm like, he's fucking his daughter.
So this was originally given an X rating, and Alan Parker was fighting with the MPAA to be like, I'm not cutting this, whatever. But it was getting down to release time, and I forget who was releasing it, but they were like, we're not putting this out with an X rating, so do something.
Yeah.
So he finally trimmed off 10 seconds of that sex scene, and they...
I was going to say, you can leave in 45 seconds of and they fucking were like, in blood.
Okay, you can do it. And I found out that the 10 seconds that was cut was mostly Mickey Rourke's bare buttocks thrusting.
Just a clenched butt.
That's what the rest of it is too.
Just that clenched butt.
But then you find out that she's 17. So that is gross.
Yeah, but see, I like when stuff makes me uncomfortable because it takes so much for me to be uncomfortable. So the fact that he was fucking a 17-year-old daughter... I kind of dug it. It's
like pretty fucked up. Highly recommend it.
Yep. It wasn't like the blood and gore and stuff that I like, but you know, it was pretty.
Yeah, it was kind of like the skeeviness of this movie. I just wasn't like anticipating because I really didn't know what the movie was. So I was like, just not in that headspace. And then it started going there. I was like, oh, my innocent soul is being corrupted.
Christopher Nolan also said this was inspiration for Memento.
Really?
Which is interesting. And Dustin Hoffman at one point was considered for the role of Harry Angel, which would have been fucking weird.
Yeah, because then we would have had to see his Harry Angel, and that would have just been weird.
His Harry Angel.
But okay, so our monster this week, Louis Cypher. Also known to the general public as
it's straight up Lucifer.
What does he say at the end? He's like, even your name's a dime store joke. I was like, okay, at least someone called it out. You can't go into that just like owning it.
Yeah. Like I said, when they show him for the first time, like I saw his fingernails and he's wearing like a pentagram ring and he like grabs his cane. And I was like, oh, this guy's definitely the devil. And then he says, name's Louis. I was like, or Louis. And I'm like, well, Louis is obviously short for Lucifer. And then they were like, Cypher. I'm like, oh, it's just given to you.
He's like, I'm the devil. Lucifer, okay. I mean, delighted to meet you.
Delighted.
So another aspect of this movie is the selling of the soul to the devil, which is like that story of the crossroads, which has been in religions for centuries, but one of the most famous ones is Robert Johnson, the blues guitar player, who went to the crossroads and sold his soul to the devil for guitar skills. And with that always comes a price. And that's kind of what sets up this whole, or doesn't really set it up, but that's kind of like the core of this story is what happens when you sell your soul to the devil, to Louis. Yep. Good old Louis. What happens when good old Louis buys your soul?
Bobby D. Yeah, so, it's never going to work out, guys.
Yeah.
Ever. It never works out. We should do a ranking of like the top five movie devils. Would Bobby D get into your top five in this movie?
No. As a kid, I was a huge Robert De Niro fan. I still am, but like when I was a kid, I went like on a Robert De Niro bender for like 6 years. And when I heard he was in this movie, I was so excited and I watched it when I was younger and I was so pissed because I was younger and I didn't really follow the story, but Robert De Niro was in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you also didn't follow
fuck?
The opening credits. Yeah. Special appearance by Robert. I was like, wait a minute. He's on the poster. What is this horse shit?
Right. So I remember being so upset, but no, I mean, his performance as good old Louis was okay.
Yeah.
But it just,
it's literally just Robert De Niro. Just like,
yeah,
at the
he's
camera.
Just like talking. Yeah.
He's like, hey, you fuck with me. I fuck with you. How about that? Okay. I'm like, okay. I also love that he lets his hair down in the end of the movie. He's like, finally, just like waving his
ridiculous.
Locks around.
But no, I probably wouldn't put him in my top five movie devils. Would you?
Okay. I would not. I don't think so.
I think I know my favorite movie devil.
Who?
Al Pacino.
Oh, that's a good one.
In what?
The Devil's Advocate.
Advocate.
With Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is Dave Grohl in The Pick of Destiny.
It's a good depiction.
So wait, what? Dave Grohl plays the devil in The Pick of Destiny?
Yeah. Have you never seen it, Zach?
Uh-uh.
Wait, what?
I may have seen it years ago, but I don't remember anything about it.
Oh, yeah. Don't you remember the end when they're having the battle with the devil and he's playing the drums? I'm the devil, I love metal.
I don't.
And then he starts playing the guitar. Yeah, because it's Dave fucking Grohl.
Nice. Well, it surprised me because then he just made Studio 666 recently.
Does David Grohl worship Satan?
Probably.
Oh, there we have it, folks. This is where you get your breaking news.
All right. Well, let's dive into Angel Heart.
What was the significance of opening up on the cat and the dog?
And the dead person?
Kind of like happening upon the dead person. Was there anything there? I wasn't sure. And then
cats and dogs, good and evil, fucking one rain, versus
raining
like,
cats and dogs,
arch nemesis, evil. Angels, devils.
Little on the nose, you guys, this director. Yep. They were like, well, what about like subtleties? Like, I don't know. What does that mean?
What?
Huh? I don't know the word.
What is that?
What?
The first thing I thought of, I really wanted Mickey Rourke to say when he first shows up on screen as Harry Angel, I really wanted him to say, I came here to smoke cigarettes and blow bubbles. And I'm all out of cigarettes. And we learned quite a bit about his character from the first minute that we see him. His gun is just like loosely thrown in his junk drawer. And he like shuffles around as he's looking for like a piece of paper. Did you guys notice all the fans in this movie?
I did.
Yes. They're all squeaky.
It's a hot ass. All the
squeaky, slow-moving fans.
Yeah. It's the devil's one power. He's like, I'm going to break your fan. You're going to be so hot.
Well, hell is also hot. So,
on a commentary with Alan Parker on the, I think it's on the Blu-ray, he said he uses fans. Normal, ordinary fans, contraptions pushing air into the space before them, as a kind of inanimate version of the Greek choir foretelling the impending doom. So that's apparently why he used
fans. Oh, so when a fan shows up.
Because it's kind of like oranges in The Godfather.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I would have guessed that Mickey Rourke was like, I'll do this movie under one condition. I want fans on set. I want my fans.
But none of them were turned on.
No, but like he was saying, like just, his fans, like his like human fans. Oh, his fans. And then the he comes on
people
set.
People rooting for him.
Actual fans, and he's like,
oh my God.
Parker. And he's like Mickey, and they winked at each other, and then they're like, okay, let's do this. Okay, this is a good time.
And that was like,
we don't have enough power for all these fans.
He's like, with you on set, we do.
Oh, that's sweet.
There's a really good rapport on set.
When Harry Angel goes into the like church, I guess it's like a weird apartment building, but there's like a church in it. And he goes up the stairs to Louis's office. And that's where we see for the first time, like all these like really cool shots of like everything's in the shadows and light pockets of light and this and that. And I just thought that's where I was like, oh, man, the cinematography in this movie is awesome. And it was
done
by Michael Saracen,
who
did the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
War for the Planet of the Apes. And he also did Prisoner of Azkaban.
Speaking of Harry's.
Yeah.
Speaking of
Harry's. He only works with like in the confines of hairiness. The characters need to be named Harry,
or
the
characters apes. Need to be Harry.
No, I agree. It's a very beautiful movie. And it actually reminds me of, again, when we were talking about making our short film Cottonmouth, which we just released today. And if you are listening, you should go on to YouTube and watch it.
That's right.
You use that as a reference point because Cottonmouth is set during a heat wave. And now that I've seen this movie, but I saw the pictures that you showed me first. It's a very hot movie. Everything's hot.
Yes, it is. Everything's
hot.
sweaty, even when they're in New York in like the winter.
Yeah.
Everything seems to be like, there's still like fans going and like everything seems to be just like stuffy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of that, Danny Cottonmouth, check out Cottonmouth on YouTube and you can
find the link.
Yes. Yes. You can find the link on our Instagram, Cottonmouth Film, and just click on it and watch it. It's like good, you know, like we made it.
Starring the wonderful Heather Langenkamp.
Heather fucking Langenkamp.
That's right. When he's in that church building and there's Pastor John, there's like the thing, it says Pastor John is God. And I really, really wanted him to be Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy like playing all of the characters of that scene.
Yeah.
So, okay, I actually had a question about him. Is the idea supposed to be that, like, did he sell his soul to the devil too to have that power? Because it is very, like, gross.
This is New York City. He sold his soul to the devil to get that room for his church.
Yeah, just the room.
Well, he can't even get anything better than a Cadillac.
He didn't even buy the room. He's still renting. He's like, fuck. He's like, I'll never see that money again.
I don't know. That's a good point.
Felt like because everyone in this movie is very much like, you know, talking about like meeting the monster, which is obviously the devil in this case, but everyone's so gross and morally corrupt, you know?
Yeah. It's like a dirty, seedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even there's a part where you get what, I can't remember the scene specifically, but oh, it was after he, and again, this is even before we find out that Epiphany is Harry's daughter, where he's just so gross to her. Like the second she mentions something about not having a husband, he immediately just goes into like creep stare and like just wants to have sex. But then they sort of contrast that with one of the cops who's just like a racist fucking pig.
You're right.
And
right.
You're like, oh, yeah, are gross. Like, Harry's our hero. And you're like, wait a minute. No, I'm literally just watching two awful people just have a conversation with each other. And then, like, even the people who are coming after Harry, you find out they're just as morally corrupt. Everyone is just so awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then even at the end, the baby has like the devil eyes. So it's almost like no one gets away. Like you're fucked if you're in this movie.
Okay.
Here's a question. And this comes just slightly in a little bit, but it has to do with Pastor John. When he goes back to like investigate the church where he met Lewis earlier, and he comes up on that like old woman in black that we never really see their face.
Oh, yeah.
Why did those guys attack him?
Yeah, who is she and why was he? Yeah, good, great question. I meant to ask that too. No idea. I got nothing for you.
Yeah. They get in this big brawl and then he runs away and knocks over Pastor John in his like procession thing. And it doesn't, I don't understand why.
Yeah, because then he.
Oh, yeah, he definitely ran through that crowd of people in the most inconvenient way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like go around.
Like could have just went like this and been out of the crowd. Yeah. And instead he just goes like underneath his fucking chariot.
Or go the other direction. Why are you going down that side of the street anyways? Just run the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Harry meets Lewis for the first time, Lewis sounds so funny calling him Lewis.
yeah.
He says to Harry, I have a feeling I've met you before. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool because it's like, he knows. He's just like we said, he's fucking with him. He's like, huh?
Yeah. So that goes because it keeps reminding me of this part later on in the movie where he's about to fuck his 17-year-old daughter. Oof. And he says,
does put a sour taste in the,
they're talking about Johnny. And he's like, tell me about Johnny. And she goes, well, I never met him or whatever. And he goes, he was a creep. You are Johnny and you are a creep.
He's like, looks at the camera. Yeah. He's like,
but he doesn't know that he's Johnny.
I know that, but it's still like he's being a huge creeper. Mm-hmm. And like, if I didn't know that he was Johnny at that point, I would have been like, you're calling Johnny a creep? Look at how creepy you are. Right. But they're the same person.
Mm-hmm. I want someone to cut this movie together a creep. Where they can like somehow cut out Mickey Rourke's character and replace him with the old creepy guy from Family Guy. It's just like him throughout the whole movie.
Do you want some popsicles? Do you want some popsicles? You want to come over later and have some popsicles? I'm not whistly enough, but
that's pretty whistly. That was pretty good.
I'm looking for Jack.
Never mind. Oh no! I give you guys so much credit. I didn't even make the attempt.
Is Christopher home? Is Christopher home? I'm looking for Christopher. We can have some popsicles. Johnny Favorite around? I'm looking for Johnny Favorite. He's a creep. That old Johnny Favorite, he's a creep. Sorry.
Say, I've got a thing about chickens.
Oh, the chicken. Oh. That's
funny. I've got a thing about chickens. Chickens. There's only one S to whistle. I've got a thing about chickens.
Wait a minute. Okay. I'm not to disrupt what was just like an amazing performance. What was up with the chickens in this movie?
I don't know.
Because he used to do voodoo.
But I laughed so hard. Chickens are bad. No, okay, so I get that. That makes sense. It's like in his subconscious. Got it. That's good. Mm-hmm. I laughed so hard because they set up this like fear of chickens. And then literally he's being chased. He's in the barn. Yeah. And he's just surrounded by chickens. And at that point, you don't know why he's bothered by them. Yeah. So it's like, oh no, he met his great fear. And it's just him being chased by chickens. Yeah. And he's like, ah, he's just freaking out.
It's like Indiana Jones in the snake car of the train.
Exactly like that.
Why'd it have to be snakes?
This movie made me feel like nasty.
Yeah, dirty.
Yeah. I feel like gross.
It was supposed to.
I'm like not. I love gumbo. Don't want gumbo. Love chicken. Don't want chicken.
Oh my God.
That's how I want to go. I want to be drowned in a boiling vat of gumbo.
Yeah.
It just seems like a nice like open casket sort of setup.
Wait, do you want to be like. You want it to be like boiling gumbo, or you want it to be like temperature where you could eat it. So you could like eat it while you were drowning and like.
Oh, eat it. It'll be scaldingly hot in my mouth and also on my face as it melts me.
Yeah. But you'd be okay with that?
Yeah. I think that's like, that just of all the ways to go, that seems the most like low key and casual.
Yeah.
You know, no explanation.
You should probably jump into the vat of gumbo. Not just don't just stick your head in.
Yeah.
Be like a hot tub.
You know what you have to do? It has to be really good gumbo, and you can't share your secret recipe with anyone. And you have to dive in with the recipe.
Mm-hmm. So you can only make it once
with you. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Harry goes to see Dr. Fowler, and we.
Fowler chicken.
Shit.
He wasn't afraid of the drugs, he was afraid of his name.
Mm hmm. Yep. Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Yeah. So he goes to see Fowler and he puts him to bed, gives him a little nappy, and he goes to the diner, and which is actually the diner in Diner. He actually drove to Baltimore.
Well, wait, what if there's like a we were talking about the multiverse of madness. What if there's like a whole franchise here where Angel Heart is just one part of a franchise? In which all of the characters from Diner make a deal with the devil. And they all have to maybe the diner is sort of like a purgatory. Maybe is the diner in Diner hell? Maybe.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this is basically just a prequel. Or it's a sequel to Diner, I guess.
I think it's a companion piece. It's a spiritual sequel to Diner.
Yes. It's like in the same way that Marvel has its Disney Plus TV series that sort of like fill in the gaps between the movies. It's like you don't have to see them. You don't have to see Angel Heart to appreciate Diner.
That's true.
But you really get a full comprehensive story and, for lack of a better word, a meal if you watch it, which is appropriate because it's a diner. And you get plenty of grease because there's no fans. Everyone's greasy.
So
enter John Travolta from singing Grease.
From singing?
Yeah, from the Grease movie singing.
From the Grease. From the Grease.
Go Grease Lightning, you're burning up the quarter mile.
Grease Lightning, go Grease Lightning. Grease Lightning, go Grease Lightning.
And when he gets back to Fowler is dead as a one-eyed chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Fowler had the gun in his hand, correct?
Yes. And a picture frame and the Bible. Felt the bullet Bible.
Right. But we're still, like, he did not kill himself, right?
No. Harry killed him.
But it was made to look like he killed himself. But for some reason, Harry still wipes all of his prints and stuff down as if he knows.
Maybe it was just because he was there. It was less about, like, I did it.
I mean.
Well, Harry doesn't know that he's doing these things.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
You're saying because it's set up to make it look like he killed himself, there's no point to wiping down your fingerprints because it's okay if you were there.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
That's especially a great point, though.
Back then, it would be open and shut.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, because you could look at it as though he was just, like, paranoid. You know, like, just covers tracks just in case. So he's not, like, an accomplice to murder. Or can he be an accomplice? I guess, yeah. Oh, speaking of the life of David Gale, you can be an accomplice to suicide.
You sure can.
This guy, this director, is attracted to a very specific type of storytelling.
On a lighter note, do you guys think it's as cool as I do how Harry fucking lights his matches on everything?
Oh, I didn't notice.
I do like that.
Yeah. He's like, like on the fucking wall, on the dead, on Dr. Fowler's shoe. He's just like, lights a cigarette.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Is that supposed to be some, like, thing where it's like, because he's going to hell and he can make fire anywhere? And here he is trying to find it. I don't know.
He can make fire anywhere. He's not an X-Men, Danny.
Oh. Did you guys know that the egg is the symbol of the soul?
Something I learned recently. Some religions.
I didn't know that.
Me neither.
And then the devil eats it.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
The devil eats your soul.
We're going to revisit this scene a little later. Just spoiler alert.
It must be one of your monsters.
Hard-boiled eggs.
What, you don't like the way Robert De Niro holds the egg with his nasty long fingernails? And then
I will say, though, when he dumps the salt on it, I was like, you're not using all that salt. And he does blow it away. I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then Harry, like, grabs some and puts it over his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Ooh, superstitious, just, but it's not, like, going to help you.
Lloyd Christmas.
You spilled the salt. Spilling the salt is really bad luck. We're driving halfway across the country. The last thing we need is bad luck. Quick, toss some salt over your left shoulder. He picks up the whole thing.
Tosses it over his right. The whole salt shaker over his right shoulder.
Oh, my God. At least we're not getting off track. We're good.
Yeah. You know what scene I love? The scene on the beach.
Oh, love I thought it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
It's funny you bring this up. It was the first time in the movie where, not the first time in the movie. This is separate. I liked the look of it. So it stood out. So it's very memorable for that. And you do get a lot of, like, information and exposition, but it was the one scene in the movie where I did feel like, oh yeah, this was adapted from a book. Because I feel like if this was in an original script, you would never have a character just go to a location we've never seen and will never revisit to meet characters we've never seen and will never revisit to get information. And I just thought that was really funny.
That's a good point.
That doesn't mean it's a bad scene. It just stood out. And that was why.
So that's the scene where he, like, goes, the guy's sitting in the chair, in the lawn chair, and he's talking to him.
And he gets the really cool nose guard.
Yeah, is that a sun blocker? Is that
apparently
what that's for?
Apparently.
Yeah.
One of the funniest scenes in this movie is when He goes, what is her? Oh God, why? Epiphany. He goes to her house and the kid is like looking out, and you just see Mickey Rourke with this weird nose just staring from the bushes. And I'm like, that will burn into your memory as like one of the most haunting images ever. So bizarre. I loved it.
So the lady in the water, right? She was the lady in the water. Standing in the water,
the original
was supposed to be played by a different actress, but during the first take of that scene of her reading her lines, a wave came in and knocked her over, and she got hurt and refused to go back in the water to do the scene. So they had to get a different actress to replace her to do that one little, well, few lines. I just thought that was funny.
Ironically, it was Bryce Dallas Howard who felt bad about that decision and went on to star as the lady in the water.
Yes.
She's like, I'm going to make up for this moment. I'm going to go all in. Titular character.
Okay. So now we're headed to New Orleans.
I wonder if that's significant that we go to Coney Island right before he goes to New Orleans, because it's sort of like breezy and cool, and it's like, that's it, we're never gonna come back here. There's like that, you know, space of like comfort is over, so enjoy it while it lasts.
Good thinking, Danny.
That could be
And this was a part that Alan Parker changed for the script. They originally didn't go to New Orleans.
Oh really?
They stayed in New York. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, such a great move to move locations.
And we meet Madame Krusemark.
Charlotte Rampling did not know she was in this. Love her. She's just a gem.
Yeah, this is also creepy because the way that he follows her.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good at being a creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This, I will say again, to no fault of its own, like for like the movie, because I get it. Like when you have like a novel, there's just so many, there's usually in some cases so many characters, there's just so much to digest, but you have the length of the novel to sort of live in that world and explore it.
Right.
And when you're so faithful to a book, you will introduce characters and locations so late in the game that you're like, wait, what, who? And I guess in this case it works because it's a mystery. So you're sort of like meeting the, you know, the suspects or the, you know, potential suspects or victims. But that was what sort of threw me off a little bit when I was trying to sort of latch on to what was happening, because there was so much information being dumped on us, and I struggled a little bit on account of that.
Do we know who Epiphany's mom is?
Yes, Epiphany's mom is the woman.
Didn't she own the store?
Yeah. I'm wondering if Johnny Favorite was a black man, because in this story in 1955, segregation was like huge, right? Yeah. And even on the bus there, on the trolley in New Orleans, it says, what does it say? Like for colored patrons only behind this colors line, only, whatever, colored only. And he sits there, no problem. Yes, he's being a detective and whatever. But he just like sits in the back of the bus, no problem.
Oh, kind of subconsciously.
Like when he's in like Harlem or whatever at the beginning, and there's the black family coming out of the church, and like the lady drops her groceries or something, or her hat, drops her hat, and he like helps her with it, and he's like very kind. And then Epiphany is black. Point. I wonder if Johnny Favorite was a black man.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
And it doesn't have to be. I mean, he could just be, Harry Angel could just be a decent fucking person when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, all the musicians that he played with.
Oh, yeah, that's another point I wanted to make. Yeah, yes, thank you for saying that, because I had forgotten. Yeah, when, like Toot Sweet and all those guys were like blues guitar players and jazz musicians. And
what a great point.
Yeah, and what's her name's dad said that he wanted to get rid of him too. Margaret's dad.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all like just a bunch of like shitty
racists. Because he didn't want them to be together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were all high class.
That's got to be it. I think that's 100% the case. Yeah.
Man.
One thing I didn't catch on to.
Wow.
I wish they gave us like one more like thing just to sort of like confirm it. But that's
push it over the edge, yeah.
Well, now I'm like wondering, and this could mean nothing, but he sees that woman at the church. Oh, I wish we had more to that. Like, if was that like a family member
who turns out to not be a woman?
Oh, wait, I missed that. What? Who is it?
Oh, did you not see that?
No.
At the very end, when he like he's going back to his hotel room when he knows that he's committed all these crimes and he's about to find Epiphany dead on the bed.
Yeah.
The woman in black is sitting there outside his room, and he walks past her, and we finally see their face, and it's Robert De Niro without a beard.
How the fuck did I miss that? That seems so important.
I didn't see that either.
That wasn't even in the script.
I don't know.
Robert De Niro just showed up. They're like, who is that? And they're like, I think that's Robert De Niro. They're like, okay, just roll.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I just thought about that and kind of makes sense.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Oh, Evangeline Proudfoot.
Evangeline. Okay.
Evangeline Proudfoot. That was the mom's name. So.
Mm-hmm.
Harry goes and he finally tracks down Toots Sweet, playing the guitar there in a nightclub. And he confronts him about Johnny Favorite and all this stuff. And
but you also skipped the first time that he met Epiphany. In between Margaret having a Satan necklace on, he meets Epiphany and then he goes to the club.
Oh, yeah. She had the same necklace as Lewis has a ring of.
His ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever said.
And then he goes.
But you know how you said Christopher Nolan was inspired by this movie to write Memento?
Mm-hmm.
What if Harry, after, well, okay, his original identity, Favorite, after he killed the real Harry, he wanted to leave quote unquote mementos for himself to remember like what he did. So he's like, all right, I'm going to name my daughter Epiphany. So I know that when I meet her again, I'm going to have an epiphany about what happened. He's like, fingers crossed, that's enough to do the trick. It wasn't, but.
No.
We find out that Johnny Favorite was her dad.
Okay, right.
So we're getting some information, and then we see like there's a little bit of some chemistry between them, which ironically, if you remove like the sexual part of it, would make sense that they would have, you know, chemistry because they're family.
Right, there'd be
like,
something
there's a
there.
Relationship yeah. there. It's just so happens that it kind of like goes in the worst possible direction.
Right. And then he goes to meet Toots at the club.
Yes.
And we get a little confrontation between them. We get to the bathroom and there's the chicken foot on urinal.
Yep.
Which is supposed to symbolize like some voodoo bad luck thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets beat up again and thrown out.
Yeah.
In the bathroom this time. But he doesn't give up there. He follows Toots to Epiphany's place where they have the little voodoo circle. And we find out that Toots is involved in some form of spiritual voodoo.
Yeah. We're little by little, we're realizing that everyone around here has a tie to voodoo. Is it voodooism? Voodoo?
Voodooism, I guess. Yeah.
Or some sort of like satanic ties. So everyone is very religious, like they're like religious extremists, I guess, in the way that they practice these, I don't know, or I guess the way that they're involved in these religions and beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like fucking with Harry's head because it's like, little do we know, he's actually very, you know, learned in the practice of voodooism.
Right.
He doesn't realize that. So it all just seems so just like shocking and crazy.
He follows Toots back after that to his apartment and confronts him about the whole ritual. And they get into a fight and Toots like holds his own. It seems like he'd be kind of a little bit more frail than he is, but he fucking goes for it. And he fucking like he beats him up and then he's like, call me. Like, what? He like writes his number down. Oh, he writes his number down and sticks it in his mouth. Was that not him? Was he really sticking his dick in his mouth?
Maybe it was a dick stick.
Oh, maybe.
Dick, wiggling it like a worm, just like.
Then he has like this dream about he's all covered in blood, like on his chest. And you kind of think like maybe he got stabbed or something during that confrontation with Toots. But no, he's just fucking having crazy dreams.
But he wasn't having dreams. He was covered in that guy's dick blood.
Isn't this the same around the same time that he cut out?
Oh, shit.
What's her name's heart? Yeah. Because doesn't he go right from the dick cutting to the heart? No.
Maybe. No,
there's a gap.
He doesn't go back to see Madame Krusemark until he goes back and she's dead.
Gotcha.
So he would have killed her that time that he was there for the appointment. We just don't see it. But then we're introduced to the super racist New Orleans cop who also plays a scuzzy sleazeball guy in New Orleans in Hard Target. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What a deep cut. I haven't seen that in a while. Uh-huh. He just like jumped out of offset to the next one.
Yeah, I was like, does this guy he's like a New Orleans local and people just like hire him when they need like a scuzzy fucking.
What a terrible like typecasting to get. You're like, he's like a really good person. And those were his
two movies, Angel Heart and Hard Target. He's like, he just waits every day. He's like, I know they're going to call.
He was in two movies. His kids are, he's like a great family guy. And his kids are like, can we see your movie, Dad? He's like, ugh.
Not until you're 18. But he informs Harry that Toots was killed and choked to death by his own member, his penis.
I was thinking he was like choked to death, like they wrapped his penis around his neck.
It was so long, it reached all the way around his neck and just like he choked him in it.
Well, in life he was famous for his giant penis. In death he was famous for being choked by his giant penis.
Oh gosh. And we're starting to get Harry have these like flashback memories of the war.
Yeah, like Times Square.
Of like a celebration after the war in Times Square. Yeah. And so we know there's some connection between him and this soldier, but we don't know what it is yet. And this is where we find out that Madame Krusemark got killed. She dead. And her heart's just bleh on the table.
Mm-hmm. Hey, been there. Bad breakup, heart's just on the table.
But how cool was the suspense of him like in her apartment and the tap dancing kid on the street? And it kept cutting back and forth and back and forth. And it was just like the music was getting like real loud and the guys are following him and he stops at that Cajun dude's boat house and was like, I want to buy some crawfish. And then the dog comes and bites him.
So everyone's out to get him. This poor guy. Like, what has he ever done?
Poor guy.
Yep.
And then he goes to Epiphany's again and she's like, what happened to you? Like, what happened? And he's like, I need someone to clean my clothes. But this is where we find out that Johnny Favorite was Epiphany's father.
And then he goes to the church and meets Lewis.
Yeah, he meets Lewis in the church. And I love that, like, he's telling Harry to watch his mouth when they're in the church. And he's like, like, we're in the house of the Lord.
The one thing I appreciated in this movie, because this is what the scene was, is like every now and then it'll sort of recap what just happened in the past 15 minutes. He's like, I just went here and then did this. And then this guy died because I'm like, oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. Now I'm back. Got it.
And after this, Harry leaves the church and he heads back to his hotel room and it's raining very hard. And Epiphany is propped up on his door, like just waiting for him.
Yeah.
And we get into some crazy shit now. Because we find out she's 17. Yeah. We find out that his roof leaks a lot.
Sometimes it leaks with blood.
Sometimes it leaks with blood. And This scene is grossy gross.
Yeah. The only word I had for it was interesting.
That's the word you went with? Interesting?
That's the word I went with. Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Among the tightened.
Yeah. A lot of
butt.
Yeah, a lot of like a lot dress. Of humping.
A lot of humping. There was blood everywhere. A lot of very humping. Watery blood.
A lot of blood. A lot of a lot of choking.
Yeah, a lot of aggression.
Oh yeah.
A lot of aggression. Yeah.
That's right.
Which when consensual is okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like the way he did it may have been crossing a line.
Well, that was weird because like well, yeah, when he's doing it, she was like, stop, like you're fucking hurting me. She gave off that bit. But then she just like takes a bath and she's just like, hey, what's up? Like that was
so
cool.
That happened.
So that happened.
Okay, cool.
She wasn't like you'd think she'd be like, well, I'm
he didn't
here.
Kill her at that point. That wasn't when he actually killed her.
Oh, that's a great point. Does he kill her right after that?
It could be that he killed her then.
I mean,
and
I would
he's
think
just
that,
like,
that was her act. I was right.
Because she's singing.
That's what I thought.
Because she's singing one of Johnny's songs. And that was probably just in his memory.
A trigger.
Or in his. Wow. Yeah. Good point, Casey. Good point. So he did kill her on the bed there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That just made me feel even worse.
Yeah. Such a disturbing movie. And then when you find out like how he killed her and like how he used the gun, it was just like, God damn it. This is definitely, I thought it's a very well-made movie. I thought they did a good job. It was fun in the way that it's a murder mystery that you're just like, you know, it's always fun to solve a mystery. But it's definitely, you know, we were talking about Blair Witch 2. It is not Blair Witch 2, where you just want to pop that on in a party and like take
pop
shots every time someone does something that doesn't make any sense. This is one that I want to, it'll sit with me in my memory and I will appreciate it and it will be just disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So then Harry, his followers come back. His followers are working for Madame Krusemark's father.
Ethan, I believe.
And this is where he like confronts him. He's like, enough with this shit. And he like, does he headbutt the guy? Like,
oh yeah.
Yes. In the
through
car?
The car door. Like one of the coolest things anyone could ever do.
Yeah. And then they sick the dog on him. He goes in the horse barn and the fucking horse kicks the dog against just like, and then you get your running through the chickens, which was fun.
Classic chicken.
Classic
scare.
Chicken run. And then he immediately goes to meet Mr. Krusemark, Ethan.
Yep.
And they're
we
at
do
the track.
Find out really important information here that Gumbo gives Harry the shits. Like really just like vital information we needed to know. I'm like really glad. I feel like, oh, okay, I got something from this movie. Okay, good.
That is important information. But
JK,
what,
there's more important information.
What might be more important is that Ethan Krusemark, who is like this very rich, powerful man, was into voodoo, into devil worshiping. Not that voodoo, we should state that it might get a bad rap that voodoo goes along with devil worship and all that stuff, but they don't always have similarities. So
in this movie they're together.
In this movie they're together, but that's not always
and they
the
are
case.
Considered for this movie like an evil thing.
Yes.
Like it's bad. All this is bad.
But we find out that he was into it and so he got his daughter into it. And then Johnny was with his daughter. Johnny sold his soul, gave his soul to the devil. Then he tried to get out of it. He tried to scoot away with the fame and not pay his price. And
yeah, a lot of exposition. I was not expecting that in this moment. That kind of actually, I was like, oh, I was like, I just kind of like looked at the screen. I was like, wait, we're getting so much right now.
Yeah, because it's kind of like the movie, it goes along and you're like, okay, it's unfolding. And then you get to the end and they just like info dump on you.
100%.
Yeah, because the whole time that it's unfolding, you don't find anything out.
No.
Right.
It's like playing the game Clue, where you're just like, it could be this, it could be that. Maybe it was happening here, maybe. And then all of a sudden you open the little folder and you've got like the three cards. Like, it was the candlestick in the lounge with Colonel Mustard. You're like, oh my God, what? How? What do you mean? What was his motive?
Yeah. So it's so unexpected because it just like happens.
Yeah.
But he get like Mickey Rourke has this cool like breakdown in the bathroom looking into the mirror when he keeps shouting like,
oh, yeah,
who was the boy? Who was the boy? Meaning like, who was the soldier that Johnny Favorite
massacred
to take over? And it turns out it was him. When he comes out of that bathroom, we see that Mr. Krusemark is gone and he is floating, sort of. He's head first in a pot of gumbo. But Harry runs back to Madame Krusemark's, finds the little vase that he was told had the dog tags in it of the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And he finds out Harold Angel. Bam.
Harold Angel.
So he's a little fucked up now. He's a little pissed off.
A little fucked up. Yeah.
And he says, oh, shit. Epiphany. So he goes back to his apartment, hotel room, and he finds her dead. The cops are there. That's it.
Who is she? She's my daughter.
She's my daughter. Ugh. And
I thought he was going to kill himself because they revealed the gun and everything.
Uh-huh.
Like, who would want to live? Which is funny because you would think, I guess that says a lot about his character, where it's like, they highlight the gun again when Robert De Niro is like, I don't remember exactly what happens, but you just see a close up of the gun, kind of implying the fact that like, you can kill yourself. Like, you're going to go right to hell.
I can't believe I passed over the reveal of Lucifer.
I know.
That's when Robert De Niro was there.
I mean, how I met your monster. It's how I'm going to leave your monster.
How I left and didn't even say hi to your monster.
Yeah. Rude. How I was rude to your monster.
But this is where, you know, he lets his hair down and he's like, Harry figures it out that Lewis Cipher, Lucifer, I mean, he's not a very good private eye because it took him this long to figure that out. But, and De Niro's got those fucking eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They look really good on him. But then when Harry goes back to his apartment and he finds Epiphany and the baby's there and his eyes, they look...
Well, they not only don't look great, I didn't get it. I was like, is he the baby now? Is he channeling him or is he just now a baby? Like, what?
Yeah, why is this baby the devil?
I didn't get it. I didn't get it.
It's like one of those things at the end where it's like, do we put it in? Do we not put it in? Do we put it in?
It reminds me of the dog, you know, like in the opening credits of Goosebumps when it has like the dog with like the eyes flash like bright yellow.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically the same.
Yes.
Same effect.
So that is Angel Heart in a nutshell. As far as reveals go, there's not many. There could really only be one. So it's like the intro was Lewis Cipher and the reveal was Lucifer at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now it's time for a segment that I like to call The Real Monster.
Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the Gingerbread Man.
You're a monster.
I'm not the monster here. You are. You and the rest of that fairy tale trash poisoning my perfect world. Now tell me, where are the others?
Eat me!
Do you guys have surreal monsters for this episode? Danny?
Mine is not very fun or colorful. It's hard-boiled eggs. I don't like them. We got to stop eating hard-boiled eggs.
Danny, do you not like deviled eggs?
No. I think they're disgusting.
Oh, dude, I could.
Really? Because I think they're disgusting, too. I eat hard-boiled eggs, but I only eat the whites. I hate yolks. I hate
I had to come around to just eggs in general.
Oh, I love
still,
eggs.
Like, struggle
Ooh,
with
eggs.
Dippy
eggs.
I'm like.
Ooh, eggs on my veggie burger?
Bro, I'm like, protein. But, like, I don't like it. Mm. I feel like I need it.
Well,
I don't like
chicken.
It.
Chicken has like four times the amount of protein. Just eat chicken.
Casey, what about you? What's your real monster?
I have two. I have squeaky fans.
Okay.
And which technically in this movie, they are used as impending doom. So they are kind of a monster, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have that, and I have there was one other quote unquote sex scene when he meets with that woman that has pictures.
Oh right, she's
has information on Johnny Favorite. Okay, so they're foreplay because they were like undressing and talking about this other guy and all of these other things that were going on.
It was so like transactional, like just like here's your information.
Yes.
So my real monster, I have a few, but I have actually just like one real monster. But some runners up are the devil baby at the end. One of the thugs for shooting the horse. He shot the horse and it fell over on him. The New Orleans cop for shouting racial slurs on the balcony there. But my number one real monster is Harry for dumping his cigarettes out of the ashtray in his car onto the street, along with the pack of cigarettes, the empty pack of cigarettes.
Not because he fucked his 17-year-old daughter.
Well, you can be a monster for multiple reasons, but it's the cigarettes that got me.
Okay. Disgusting. Disgusting.
All right. Well, that is Angel Heart. Do you guys have anything else to add?
It's a little creepy.
A little creepy. Listeners, if you guys enjoy Angel Heart or you don't enjoy Angel Heart, we want to know about it. Let us know on Twitter at I Met Your Monster or Facebook and Instagram at How I Met Your Monster. Casey, where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram at Wolfmother Casey.
Danny, how about you?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Danny Salem. S-A-L-E-M-M-E. Two M's like the candy. Melt in your butt, not in your hands.
And you can find me on social media at Zach Gwinsick. Make sure to check out our website, howimetyourmonster.com. Sign up for our newsletter and leave us a review. If you guys are feeling spicy, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser by visiting ratethispodcast.com/monster.
Amen.
And for me and Danny, a little shameless self-promotion, as we're already promoting our show. Let's promote something else. As we mentioned earlier, we made a movie with Heather Langenkamp called Cottonmouth, and it is available now on YouTube. So just head to our Instagram page or our Facebook, Cottonmouth Film, and I'll even put a link in the show notes. So it's easy.
Oh my God. We'll
put a link in the freaking show notes.
We'll just throw it right in there. All you got to do is click down, look down, and click the button. And
everyone look down right now. There it is. Click.
And make sure to join us next week, where Casey and I will discuss a film we mentioned earlier, Fresh, streaming now on Hulu. And you don't want to miss this movie because it is something special, for real. And so, yeah, join us next week for Fresh. And as always, thank you all for listening. Now go meet some monsters.